is it really interesting to see how these companies are approaching Chicago, right?
She was telling me she's really trying to understand how the tech ecosystem here works.
What's interesting about the baby boomers is that they've never met a debt they didn't like.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Hey, welcome to Monday afternoon, everyone. Steve Bertrand in the Allstate Skyline Studio. You just heard Eric Rung say, sunny skies out there today. Looks nice. Looks a little warmer than it is, but that's okay. We'll get there. Thanks for tuning in to the Business Lunch on this Monday afternoon. You know, Chicago is becoming, it's getting the attention of high-end art auctioneers. We'll talk to Amy Guth about that a little bit later. Amy is the host of The Daily Gist, a podcast you can pick up at WGNradio.com, done from Crane Chicago Business, too. So that's coming up in the second half hour. I just heard Orion talking about Uber stock, and Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis are here from Chicago Inno. It's not been a good start, right, when it comes to Uber.
Yeah, Uber kind of taking a beating. Their stock, you know, dipped when it started trading on Friday, and it's down about 10 or 11% so far early today. So I do think the greater market is probably playing a little bit into...
And when you say greater, you mean not so greater?
the larger market here. But, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you know, Uber's going to have to prove that it can be a profitable business, right? I mean, that's clearly, like, what they're selling is that we will have this path to profitability. But, I mean, right now, Uber is a public company that... was heavily VC-backed, that's losing, you know, $1 billion, $2 billion a year, right? And so they're going to have to prove here at some point that they can pull an Amazon, right? And go from not...
Well, who are they going to have to prove this to investors, right? They're not going to have to prove it to me if I just want to take a ride to my lunch spot.
Correct. Yeah, the market's going to have to buy into the fact that Uber can turn a profit here at some point. So, I mean, Uber's long game here, you know, the way that... You know, Amazon kind of said, you know, we're going to create the marketplace for the world. Uber wants to kind of create the transportation system, right? So whether it's a car or a bike or a scooter or a flying airplane, you know, I think that their goal is to move people around. And we're still in the very, very early days of, I think, what Uber will ultimately become.
Catherine, I was reading in the Beat, you guys put out your newsletter I think it was late last week, Friday, mm-hmm. about the first CEO of Uber was living here in Chicago when he got the job.
Yeah, so his name is Ryan Graves. This was back in 2010. He kind of lucked out. The co-founder of Uber, Travis Kalanick, he put on Twitter that he was looking for some employees. And Ryan sent him a tweet and said, hey, like, I'm interested. And that's where the story goes.
They didn't know each other.
No.
Just sent a tweet out. And did that work out for Ryan? Did he end up okay?
It did. So he became employee number one over there. So the first non-co-founder at Uber. He briefly took the CEO role for a couple of months before Kalanick took that back over. And then really kind of led SVP of operations, I think was his role. But so anyway, long story short, he left the company in 2017. But his shares, and he's still on the board today. And when Uber's IPO happened last week, his net worth was an estimated $1.5 billion.
Wow.
So that was a pretty decent tweet he sent out.
Nice quick
ago.
Response. It paid off for him.
That's right.
And I just was at Miami of Ohio this weekend. And I see he's a graduate there. So love and honor. Share some money with my son. He could use it. He's got some student loans. Hey, okay, so you talk about how Uber is transformative when it comes to transportation. LinkedIn has kind of been that, too, when it comes to finding a job or connecting in your workspace. But LinkedIn is one of those companies, too, that sort of has fostered a lot of different kind of spinoffs.
Right. And so there's an interesting kind of, you know, sort of thesis going around right now that LinkedIn is kind of going through what Craigslist went through. So Craigslist, you know, kind of created this marketplace for people to like buy and sell stuff. And then from that was born a company like Airbnb. So a chance to get a room, which is something that Craigslist did. StubHub, a chance to buy sporting tickets, right? So lots of companies kind of built off these little niche verticals from Craigslist. The same sort of thing is happening with Airbnb, and a Chicago startup is doing something kind of around tech talent.
Yeah, so they're called Human Predictions, Chicago-based company, and they're kind of a spinoff from LinkedIn. So basically, their product is a database for tech professionals.
Are they LinkedIn affiliated?
No, they're not. They're completely their own thing.
They're like a suckerfish swimming under LinkedIn, kind of, yeah.
Kind of. But they gather...
I like when Catherine says that. Kind of. No, you don't know what you're talking about.
But Human Predictions, they gather public data on tech professionals from sites like GitHub, Stack Overflow, and Meetup. So some of their data is from LinkedIn, but they said not the majority of it because LinkedIn is kind of so saturated with so many industries, right? Whereas these other sites are really tech oriented.
But this is an AI sort of thing, right? Where they can predict when someone who uses these sites might be looking for a job, short of them saying, I'm looking for a job.
Exactly, yeah. So they have a machine learning technology that kind of monitors people's public profiles, right? And the thought process here is that the more you're updating your professional information online, the chances are you're probably looking for a job or you want to appear attractive to recruiters. So they give that information to their clients who can make better decisions on who to reach out to.
So their clients who might be in the market to hire someone, they'll get a list of people who on these websites or these LinkedIn-like sites have been active, and that's an indication they might be looking for work.
Exactly, yeah. And some of their clients, they range from local companies here like Allstate, Trunk Club, Guaranteed Rate. So it seems like people are finding this useful.
So you're the senior editor, Jim Dalkey. Do you look at the people who work for you and when they start updating their LinkedIn page?
Boy, wouldn't that be an interesting feature, right? Letting current employers know when their own employees are updating their pay. I don't know if they would offer that, but yeah. I mean, the race for tech talent is so hard. Right, everybody's trying to find tech talent. There's not enough people to fill a lot of roles, right? So as you're trying to build, whether it's a large company like Allstate or a small startup, you kind of want obviously the best tech talent you can, and so this is an interesting solution for
that. And there is a perfect logic to that, isn't that? I mean, if you start to clean up the house, you're going to sell the house. Mm-hmm. If you start to clean up your profile online, it's probably, or spruce up I should say, it's probably because you want to draw some attraction.
That's right.
Okay, let's talk about Outcome Health because, well, we have to every few weeks, and it's been a while. Outcome Health was this phenomenally successful story. I remember I had him on when they raised $500 million. One of the co-CEO, I think, came on. She talked about it. And then they had a monumental fall. And now they've sold out. So I'm not sure if this is a good story for them or a bad story.
Well, I mean, I think in the grand scheme of things, it's certainly not the outcome that everyone hoped when they were raising $500 million and when they were worth $5 billion, this massive valuation. I mean, this was, the biggest startup story in Chicago since Groupon.
And just briefly, they kind of morphed what their role was, but tell me what their business was.
So basically, they sell advertising on digital screens inside doctors' offices. So while you're meeting with your doctor, there'd be a screen in there where the doctor can kind of show you different information about your condition and different steps to take. And on that screen, they would serve advertising largely from pharmaceutical companies.
And so this was when you're in the doctor's office with the doctor, or also when you're in the waiting room,
so
right?
They started in the waiting room, so okay. That was kind of the idea. So rather than watching SportsCenter or CNN, you're getting kind of health related content, and then within that content they were also selling advertising.
And Catherine, they got in trouble because they were exaggerating their eyeballs on the screens.
That's right, yeah. And they were accused of misleading their investors on the efficacy of these ads, and so those investors ended up suing them.
And so here we are, and they have a private investor buying them out.
So yeah, Little John, a private equity firm, has bought a majority stake in Outcome Health. So, I mean, to answer your first question, in some ways, this probably is an outcome that people that currently are at the company are really looking for, right? I mean, this is probably why the current CEO, Matt McNally, was sort of brought in to kind of find an opportunity to continue funding this business and making sure right. It continues. So Outcome Health is not going to shut down. They have a majority investor here, and now they're going to continue. We'll see kind of how the business evolves from here, but it doesn't appear that the outcome is going away anytime soon.
That's Jim Dalkey, senior editor at Chicago Inno. Catherine Davis writes for Chicago Inno as well. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about a spot hero for trucks. Okay, so Dalkey, you and I have been working together for 5 years, six mm-hmm. years, right? And so I don't know if you remember this, but one of the first things you were on came on when I was doing the show on Saturdays. And you said, yeah, there's a new company. I just parked my car. Like, I pulled into a parking spot, and this guy rides up on a scooter, takes my car, parks it, and he'll bring it back to me when...
Lux, yeah.
It was called Lux, and my jaw dropped. I'd never heard of such a company.
I know. Yeah, it's not even pulling into a parking space. I literally parked outside the building, the Tribune Tower, and
shows up, and he throws the scooter in your trunk and drives around until you want your car back. Are they still up and running?
I believe so. I think they've pulled out of a couple markets, but I think down south, like in Austin, they're still active. Yeah.
So there's that. And then, of course, Spot Hero came along, and now there's this new sort of Spot Hero app or company, but for big trucks, big rigs.
That's right. So, semi-trucks have really specific parking challenges, and there are a few of those. One is that a couple years ago, there was a federal mandate that says you cannot drive more than 11 hours per day. So, right. Your shift has a very hard end stop point, or you can be
fined.
And
that's monitored electronically by a computer, so you've got to be somewhere.
That's right. And so parking, especially in, you know, kind of rural areas or places their drivers are not exactly familiar with, can be challenging. And also there's a lot of safety concerns, right? Whether if you're parking on the side of the road or you're parking in a lot that you're not familiar with. So this Chicago startup is called Truck Park, and what it has built is basically Spot Hero for trucks. So allowing truckers to book parking in advance, knowing that the city that they're going to, they're going to have a spot, it's good to go, they can pull in and safely park.
So if they know they're going to make it to Effingham today, going down I-57, they can reserve a spot for, say, at the end of their 10 hours and 45 minutes in Effingham.
Exactly. So there are a few kind of sites out there that allow
Which is a beautiful city, by the way.
That allow you to do... I've never been. There are a few out there that allow you to kind of, you know, see what parking might be like, but there are not that many booking platforms. So Truck Park is really one of the first that allows you to find and pay and reserve a spot in advance.
And Catherine, you'll come with us when we go to Effingham because it'll be fun, the three of us.
Okay.
I'll pack sandwiches.
Sounds good.
But I hadn't thought of that before, right? Because that could be, Catherine, a tricky spot if the clock is ticking and you don't have a spot to park. I don't know what you, I guess you'd have to be in violation.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think the founder said that a lot of people end up parking at like gas stations or just on the side of the road. And of course, that's really dangerous. You know, people tend to rob these kind of trucks if they have the chance. And so I think that this startup really addresses those safety concerns that truck drivers face.
And it's probably, I mean, who gets the money here? Would the truck stops get paid by the people who run the app, or where's this a business?
So the app makes money like a brokerage fee through the lots. Okay. So the lots are the ones who are kind of, you know, receiving the majority of the payment, and they get about a quarter or 20% of the fee per transaction.
What's it cost to park a truck overnight in Illinois?
So in Chicago, they said it's like $20 a night.
Okay.
That goes up when you get to the East Coast. Like New York can get to be like over $100.
Wow.
So it kind of depends on the market. You know, in some places it's less. You know, if it's super rural, or it could be, you know.
So that's cheaper than if I wanted to park my car downtown. Could I use a spot for a semi?
Get to stretch out. Yeah, have some room.
Well, the time we have left now, we've talked before about this P33, a private sort of public partnership to increase Chicago's tech presence. And they hired a CEO last week, right?
That's right. Brad Henderson. So he is the first CEO of P33. P33 is this kind of broad and very ambitious initiative to make Chicago a quote-unquote top-tier tech hub by the year 2033. And so Brad Henderson, formerly of the Boston Consulting Group, is going to be the first guy in charge.
But Catherine, how do we know if P33 is a success?
Well, you know, the three main things that they're addressing are really keeping tech talent in the state, right? So the computer science grads coming out of the local universities here, I think, you know, the idea is that we want them to stay here and have them feel like this is a good job market and that they don't have to run to the Valley or New York or elsewhere to do that.
So is it a PR task ahead of them, or is it a brick and mortar? What exactly do they need to do?
Well,
I know they need to do a lot of things. But.
Yeah. So it's like a combination of things. One of it is, you know, just kind of giving people the impression that this is a tech hub that is, you know, attractive. But then I also think a lot of this means that we need more exits. We need more IPOs from the tech companies that are growing here, you know, to create the kind of wealth that people usually expect
in
other markets.
We need to have companies coming out better than did Outcome Health that we talked about earlier in the show.
That's right.
Catherine Davis and Jim Dahlke from Chicago Inno. Check out the Inno Minute every morning on the opening bell with Steve Grzanich right around 5:25. And The Beat as well. Check out their newsletter. Log in and subscribe to that at Chicago Inno. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks very much, Eric Rung. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. All right, we're watching Wall Street, of course. Wall Street is watching the trade war, the simmering, the booming. I'm not sure how you would describe a trade dispute with China. China announcing today that it would retaliate with tariff of its own after the Trump administration announced tariffs last week. And so there we are. The Dow's down 706 points. The president was tweeting quite a bit about it today. And to help me understand some of that, I thought we'd bring in Elise Glink, the publisher of thinkglink.com and the person behind bestmoneymoves.com as well, to sort things out. Elise, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you, Steve. It's kind of a crazy day out there.
You know, it's interesting to me. I was reading a Washington Post article, and the way they a lot of the president's Trumps, they had a lot of spelling errors. They seemed a little, I used the word, well, I was going to use the word erratic, and by that, what I just mean is not really well thought out. And the Washington Post writes about it this way. The president attempted to assuage the public in a series of Twitter posts, but some of his posts contained typos and misspellings, suggesting his comments had not been thoroughly vetted by White House officials and not representing planned out policy initiatives altogether. So, in other words, he was just kind of fleeing off the cuff today. But one of the things he said was that we shouldn't have to suffer through the tariffs. We should just buy non-tariff goods, which makes a lot of sense, I guess, if as long as you're not making money off selling those tariff goods. But how do we know what's tariffed and what's not? Is that easily done?
I don't think it's easily understood what it's going to look like, because there's so many component pieces that go into manufacturing things these days, and it's really hard to know what pieces come and go. If it's a completed item, maybe it wouldn't be subject to tariffs, whereas pieces that are imported in to then be constructed into a full item here in the United States might be. I think it's very difficult to know.
And so the president obviously wants to change things when it comes to, I think a lot of it has to do with structural changes in the Chinese economy, but we talk about intellectual property and things like that. So I think most agree there need to be some changes when it comes to China. They don't agree necessarily that a trade war or tariffs are the right way to go.
You know, the economy is really complicated, Steve, and trade wars almost never get you, I'm going to just say never get you where you want to go, because just simply the word war puts people on different sides of it. And what we've worked so hard on in this country is bilateral negotiations or trilateral negotiations, where everybody's side gets something that they can take home to get people behind. This kind of a situation where, you know, Trump escalates it and layers on tariffs, so then the Chinese government feels that they have to layer on tariffs. It doesn't seem to be working very well right now, but what we can see is happening is it's creating a huge amount of instability and volatility in the markets. And that's really not very good for anybody who's invested in it.
If you step back, it looks sort of like a fight between Fred and Barney on the Flintstones.
Well, it would be nice if that's all it was. We'll see. Maybe it'll end up being okay, and this is just another tactic that the president is using to extract more concessions. And I assume if that works, we're all going to be relieved. To your point about just sort of tweeting extemporaneously, I think that is what's going on, and we've seen this from the president before. In some ways, I think markets tend to ignore it a little bit. They rely less on the actual words these days, but this is an escalation certainly overall of what's been going on with China.
Okay, so we've got that, and we've got China responding today. And also today comes a report from Goldman Sachs, and they are talking about how this could lead to higher prices, which would lead to inflation, which would actually lead the Fed to increase interest rates because of the inflation. Tell me about that.
Right. Well, right now the inflation target of about 2%, we're well below that, and we've stayed below it, which is really very interesting, and completely, as Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett said the other day, an unexpected result, what you would have expected to have seen by now. But, you know, markets that are betting an if proposition, which is what you've just said, you know, if this happens, right, this happens, this happens, then we might see interest rates go up. That, to me, is overstepping it. Where I think the bigger concern is, back in January and early February, we watched the country suffer, millions of people, when they went without their paychecks. The government shut down, and people went and lost two paychecks, sometimes a little bit more than that. Contractors, I don't believe, ever made up that difference, although the full-time members of the government did. And what we saw was a direct hit to the financial well-being of a huge number of people, and it put this whole idea of who's living paycheck to paycheck in stark relief. When you layer on tariffs, the truth is that consumers are the ones who pay the difference in that. No matter where those tariffs lie, eventually that cost will get pushed to consumers as the businesses, you know, are not going to absorb it.
I saw a study that said 62% of millennials say that they're currently living paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah, isn't that scary? And that's actually a number that is a little bit lower than the numbers that I've seen, which is that a little bit more like almost 80% of all Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. So it's interesting because that's the new Modern Wealth Survey from Charles Schwab. It would be interesting to know if it's just 62% of millennials or if it's actually closer to the mid-70% range, which is the number that it's at actually in Canada and the UK as well. But scary numbers any way you look at it.
Yeah, I guess so. So we'll continue to watch that. And I want to we're almost out of time, Elise. I'm sorry I brought this up so late. But another study today said one in five of us has a problem with our credit report. That there are mistakes on our credit report. What can we do about that? Or are there alternatives?
The best thing to do, and that was based on a report actually from 2013, news story today, but an old study about errors. You should certainly take a look. With all of the breaches that we've seen, go to annualcreditreport.com. You can pull a free copy of your credit history from each of the three credit reporting bureaus, Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion, once a year, and check it carefully for errors. Each one of those bureaus has a process that you can go through to directly, you know, to tell them that those are errors and they don't belong to you. And you'll have to go through that process, but it's well worth it because a small percentage of people have enough errors that it actually changes your credit score and could cost you more money down the line.
That is Elise Glink. Read more at thinklink.com. Thanks for coming by today.
Sounds good, Steve. Thank you.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Thinking about getting a new electric vehicle like a Tesla, a Nissan Leaf, or any of the other new EVs these days? Well, prepare to tack on an extra $1,000 to that bill every year, because that's what Illinois could be charging residents if they buy an electric vehicle. What's causing the big stir is the fact that it used to be just $17 to own an electric vehicle in the state, but now the thought process is that if the change is implemented, it could raise $2.4 billion for future projects in the state and to help make roadway improvements. Sheesh. And you know, some may say that millennials are making improvements to the city just by doing the innovative work that they do every day. Cranes thinks that's the case since they released their 20 in their 20s list. The list covers a number of industries, and some of the representatives are Emily Blady of the White Sox, LaForce Baker, founder of Moon Meals, Jonathan Morley of CME Group, and others. Every year, these 20 are shaking up the old guard and keeping us up to date as we've learned firsthand in the last decade. Disruptors are vital to keeping us on the forefront of the nation's development and also global development. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here in the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. We're at 720 WGN Radio. In the studio now is Amy Guth. Of course, she's the host of The Daily Gist, the podcast that we all are subscribing to. Welcome back, Amy.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Great story in Cranes today. I was reading about auction houses and how Chicago is becoming more attractive to them.
Yeah, this is a really neat story. Lisa Bertagnoli wrote about this, how some of these really big players in the auction house space are really doubling down in Chicago because we have, you know, we don't think about it. We're here and we kind of take this beautiful city for granted sometimes, but we have, you know, the location is strategic because we can access a lot of other markets
sure.
here in this part of the country. We have a lot of collectors, a surprising number of collectors, like over 100 collectors, very serious art collectors. We have collections, museums, art fair. You know, we have all this stuff.
Well, there's Art Expo, right?
Yeah.
There's the Architectural Biennial and all of that sort of feeds into the whole thing.
Totally. And, you know, we think about, you know, what art is here. And it's kind of surprising as you dig into the story, some of the things there, like Sotheby's, they're selling several works from Chicago collections this spring. One of them is a Van Gogh work on paper. They plan to sell for between $3 and $5 million. That's
wow.
right here in the backyard.
Didn't
which is
I read
cool.
too? Someone picked up an original or something, Charles Darwin on the Origin of Species.
Yes. That's going to go up in, on June 23rd. I think the auction actually will happen in New York though. Surprisingly, they're only aiming it for about 200 to 300,000. I figured that would
Let's
go
buy
a little
it.
More.
We should
Let's
do
that.
The you know what jumped out at me was talking about the fact that they're going to auction this off in New York. Is it almost sounds like they're coming in and taking our stuff? Like they
I
said,
wonder
it's,
about
it's
that.
A better market for selling here than it is actually for buying. So they're taking what people have here, and then well, I mean, you would bring it out to where you can get a bigger price.
Absolutely. So, I mean, it's really interesting. I think the idea of how many art collectors we have here is really interesting. That's because that's if you think about that kind of investment, that would make me so nervous just to have this $1 million piece of work on my wall.
Right.
You know, I'd be nervous, a nervous wreck just knowing it was there. But we have a lot of very serious art collectors.
That's why
right here.
At my house, I cover all my Van Goghs with prints for my children from when they were in first grade.
So I do the same.
No one would
know. With your kids' work.
That's right. And by the way, they were on loan, so I need them back.
Sure, no problem.
Now, this is part of the Daily Gist coming up today?
That's right. I'm going to be talking about that. I also talk today with technology reporter John Pletz about the state's plan for marijuana revenue,
yeah,
as
right.
we're talking more and more about recreational marijuana and what that'll look like in the state. So
all right, we'll look forward to
today.
It. The Daily Gist, WGNRadio.com. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks.